is an issue that I've been interested in, but never had the time or resources to do it. So it's one of the things where I had no idea what I was going to find when I get into it. There's other things that I do where just based on my experience, and you know, I've been doing economics for almost 30 years, and so I can kind of, you give me an issue, I can kind of give you an idea of where things might go. With this one, I had, you know, a small idea, but wasn't really sure. And so to me, there was also just an intellectual interest in it. And, you know, none of my clients or grant writers ever tell me what to write or tell me what they're expecting the outcome to be. I get paid whether I say something that they want me to say or they don't, or I don't say something that they want me to say. And, you know, if they don't like it, then they don't, you know, they don't have to publish it or disseminate it. You know, even though I've been doing this for almost 30 years, I am still, you know, too young to sell out. So I try to at least keep my research as objective as possible.
Let's talk a little bit about that research then. What can you tell me about what this study found as regards to how federal money affects state spending and taxes?
So, I mean, just backing up on kind of the theory is, you know, and it's a little, I mean, if you want, there's a history and a theory. The history is when the first federal grants were made to the states in the early 1800s, the idea was that it would supplement the state spending. You know, it would just go right on top of the state spending, and states wouldn't spend anymore, and they would use this extra federal money to do all sorts of, you know, fantastic things. You remember, this is back in the 1800s. The government was a lot more decentralized, so a lot of the big projects that we think of the feds doing today were done by the states before, and so the idea was that they would spend more money. And then there was this argument, wait, you know, this could actually backfire, because what may happen is that the states may just say, thank you for that federal money, now we're going to cut our own spending, which means we could cut our own taxes, and so the federal money would replace the state money. But then what's been found and has increased over time is not only does that federal money go on top of the state money, but often it triggers additional spending at the state and local level. There's probably two big reasons why you would see that. Is mainly because there are strings attached to federal money. You know, the biggest string probably is the requirement for matching funds. So typically federal grants match state and local money. And so you could see this, for example, with the streetcar projects. In Charlotte, for example, they're planning on spending, I think, another up to $126 million on the streetcar, where half of that money would come from the federal government. On the one hand, people say, well, that's great. You know, half of it's, you know, free, quote unquote, free federal money, although remember that federal money is coming from taxpayers. And then the other half is coming from state and local sources. The mayor of Charlotte made it very clear that if they did not get the federal money, then that portion of the streetcar project would not go forward. So that additional federal money has essentially triggered all that additional spending on the streetcar in Charlotte. And so that dollar-for-dollar match, although it sounds like it's free, actually triggers additional spending. You know, you can imagine if you get a coupon to buy something that you wouldn't have bought otherwise. You know, sure, you're saving money on that thing, but now you're buying something that you weren't planning on buying, and so you have to spend that money, and you have to divert that money that you spent on something else, you know, that you were going to spend on something else. So that's one source, is the federal matching funds tend to do that. And you see that with transportation projects, and, you know, we're kind of sensitive to streetcar issues here where I live in Oregon, and I know in Charlotte it's becoming an issue too. The other string that's attached to federal money is what's often known as maintenance of effort. In other words, there is a requirement that if you are getting additional federal money, you cannot reduce your spending on a certain program. We saw this with the stimulus package. For example, some states could lose huge chunks of their stimulus money if they did not maintain higher education spending at the levels that were pre-recession levels. And some states very clearly were induced to spend more than they would have otherwise. For example, in Oregon spent almost exactly the amount necessary in order to attract that stimulus money, which tells you that that stimulus money, that carrot hanging out there, the federal money, encouraged Oregon to spend more on higher education than it probably would have otherwise in the face of a budget shortfall. So those two things, the matching funds and the maintenance of effort requirements, are what tend to increase state and local spending, even though you are getting what some people would call free federal money.
Well, as this relates to Medicaid expansion, obviously the federal government has offered to pay 100% or will pay 100% of the cost for a few years. And I think we're at this point, maybe one more year, then it drops to 90%. And then I think there's a period of uncertainty
after
that.
Yeah, and I understand that. And here's where I think we had to be really careful with my study. And I put some of the editorials out there that have invoked my study have said, I mean, there is a connection in the sense that that there are strings attached to the federal money. But two important points. One is just because of the limits of the data, I'm using federal census data and the most recent data from the census that I could get ended in 2013. That happened to be the last year right before the Medicaid expansion. So my study does not include the Medicaid expansion in there at all. And so, I mean, that's not by design and, you know, nothing nefarious. It's just that was the data limitation. And so I've tried to make clear that Medicaid expansion is different from others. What I looked at was across essentially all states, all programs arrived at a relationship. And really, if you have to drill, if you want to drill down, you know, it's really kind of a project by project issue on how that state funding works. The problem is it's really tough to disentangle those individual projects. So I looked at it more of a macro level. Anyway, on the Medicaid stuff, you're right. What I would call the ratchet effect would not be as big because at the end, the feds are still matching, you know, on a 9-to-1 ratio. So for every dollar the state spends, the feds are spending 9. Just for the Medicaid expansion part of it. That's a smaller ratchet effect than I find in my study. But because the Medicaid expansion is so big, you know, it could cover a lot of people, it's still a lot of money. You know, 10% of $1 billion is $100 million. So that's, you know, that's a big part of it.
At no point in the op-ed do you or Mr. Balfour sort of state, you know, blanketly that this is a bad thing or anything like that. But I kind of wonder, because I know the Civitas Institute's position, I know that they're opposed to the expansion of Medicaid. So I wonder, coming from that kind of perspective, when we're talking about that, if what is said is that each additional tax dollar from the federal government is associated with 82 additional cents in new state and local taxes, I'm wondering, is that a bad thing? Because what it seems to me, and I don't, it's hard for me to wrap my head around the economics of this, it seems to be that, you know, if a dollar comes in from the federal government and that triggers new state spending that's less than a dollar, it seems like that's 18 cents of profit for the state.
Well, the question is, where does that money come from?
Right.
Right. So imagine you're sitting here, you know, you're sitting in your household and your budget is balanced, everything's working fine, and you're spending exactly what you're bringing in, and you get this great offer that says, hey, 10% off a trip to Disneyland. Normally it costs $1,000. Now it'll only cost you $900. So how do you pay for the trip to Disneyland?
Right.
You know, you're getting that free $100, and it sounds like a great deal, but you still have to come up with that other $900.
Yeah, and I guess the question, you know, being, so if the money, you know, if the money ultimately goes to Disney World, kind of looking, because what I'm saying is, like, it seems like the money's coming into the state, it's going to go towards a state program, and that would be Medicaid for the poor. And so it seems like that money stays in North Carolina. And, you know, whether or not that goes to every individual who's ending up with, and it says the government burden is $158 per person, but that doesn't take into account the benefit that they would receive from the additional money that comes in. So, I mean, is there, as far as, like, you know, there have been studies talking about whether or not expanding Medicaid would be good, and this one from Centers for Health Policy Research at George Washington found that, you know, in addition to the 500,000 people who would get covered under Medicaid, that North Carolina is losing out on $21 billion in federal dollars by 2020, and then there would also be this ripple effect of jobs created and increased revenue, and not to mention the lesser costs that it would put on people who are insured, who are having to pay for the people who are getting their health coverage through the emergency room. By expanding Medicaid, does North Carolina lose or do they win?
and that's not what I was looking at.
Right, right. Well, I wonder,
and there's a lot of moving parts, because, and I think you hit on some of those moving parts, because, you know, what you had before was you had, you know, a charity care system where the cost would either be absorbed through insurance or through the health providers, you know, the hospitals providing that charity care. And that's one of the reasons why you had hospital networks who were in favor of these, of the Medicaid expansion, and also the other aspects of the Affordable Care Act. It's really too soon to tell exactly from a data standpoint what the impact is. But, you know, you can kind of think theoretically what you've got is, even if you had the same level of people, say, coming into the emergency room, what it's done now is it's shifted who's paying, from the insurers and the hospitals themselves to the insurance, which in this case would be Medicaid. But it could also be, you know, the other private insurance, but just pretend it's Medicaid. So it'd be hard to say that on net, you know, from a global standpoint, the world is better off. You know, all you've really done is change who's paying. You know, you've moved the money from one pocket to another pocket, but the pockets haven't gotten any more change.
Wouldn't most people generally agree that the emergency room is going to be more costly than Medicaid coverage for these people?
Well, that's a tough issue. I think you'd have to dig in a little bit deeper on that, because I think what we found, at least the data I've seen, and Catherine Baker, and she's only one of the researchers, but she's the one who I know by name. She's done a lot of studies involving some of this Medicaid expansion and so forth. And I think what, don't quote me on this because it may not be right, but that emergency room usage really hasn't changed with the insurance.
Oh, really?
You know, the idea was that, oh, we're going to have all these people who are now going to go see the, you know, primary care doctors instead of going to the emergency room. Well, that doesn't seem to be happening. My kids got dumped on Medicaid, and I'll tell you, man, it is hard. It's hard to find a doctor. It's hard to find a dentist. It's hard to get an appointment. And so, so if you're on Medicaid, I mean, you've got a card that says you have insurance, but when you actually try to get that insurance, you know, like try to use it,
it's tough.
Know, that's a whole other ballpark. And so what do? You march down to the emergency room. It's covered at almost 100% or 100% in Oregon. Boom. I could see someone when I want to, and I don't have to worry about making an appointment. I don't have to worry about finding a doctor. And so what it does is it actually makes it easier to use the emergency room. And so you found that, at least the study I've seen, and there may be new ones, is that emergency room usage really hasn't changed much.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, well, that would be a big failure, I guess.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Talk to some people out there. You know, finding a doctor's hard, but I'll tell you what's really hard is finding a dentist.
A dentist. Interesting. Well.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you want to speak to this, because, but, you know, it's clearly the Civitas Institute, it does not want to see expansion of Medicaid. I wonder, you know, from your perspective as someone who's looked at all this data, you also have, you know, your anecdotal sort of personal experience with it. Do you think Medicaid expansion is a good or a bad idea?
I don't think it can really break down to just a yes or no question. You know, I think that there are better ways of covering the poverty population than expanding Medicaid. Medicaid just has so many fundamental problems. You know, the big problem is the reimbursement rates are so low that doctors just don't want to be part of the Medicaid program. And I think that's never going to get better. That's going to get worse because you don't make money off of those patients. So why see them? I think if you wanted to expand health care coverage for the poor, I think what you really need to have is some sort of system where you have a private insurance system and you really reduce the mandates. My wife is beyond childbearing age, but my insurance has to pay for family planning. So,
right,
you know,
right, yeah.
Why? Mm-hmm. Why? You know, that's just kind of ridiculous. So why can't you craft an insurance product that provides coverage for the basics? I mean, there's a lot of Cadillac aspects to the Medicaid coverage. You know, things that are covered that may not necessarily need to be. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to tell you what needs to be cut, but you could craft a package of insurance that could be fairly low price. But the way that it's structured, you load on mandates and the community rating and all these other things, and then all of a sudden you've got an insurance package that costs a fortune.
You know, we're having this debate in North Carolina. It's just our lawmakers here who are very conservative are loath to expand Medicaid in this state. And they also took a lot of actions in the last session to sort of do what you had talked about as far as moving more towards a privatized kind of Medicaid system here. And so I'm not saying
it's perfect, because Arkansas has been held up as a disaster, you know, in terms of doing that private stuff. Arkansas also did a lot of fibbing about how much they thought it was actually going to cost. I don't want to be accused of saying, oh, you know, we should move to something that's more private and then have someone say, yeah, but look at Arkansas. And I'm just saying that, you know, Arkansas, you know, is an example of probably how not to do it. The reimbursement's at 100% right now from the feds. I think it's very hard to make an argument from a short-term perspective why not take it. They will cover the cost of the expansion. The feds will. But there's other costs they don't cover. For example, they don't cover, if I recall, they may not cover the what I call the marketing effort. In other words, all the efforts that you need to undertake to get people to sign up for the expanded Medicaid. You know, so that's an additional expenditure. I don't know what it would be. I mean, it doesn't have to be done either. But, you know, also some of that is done automatically through the Affordable Care Exchanges. You know, that's how my kids got dumped on Medicaid the first year. I learned my lesson. Because you type in your income, and, you know, the system's really screwy, because I typed in my income, and they said, oh, you're so poor, your kids get dumped on Medicaid. I'm like, oh, crap. And say, oh, but now you're so rich that you don't get a subsidy. I'm like, how can that be that I'm so poor, my kids are on Medicaid, but I'm so rich that I don't get a subsidy for my own insurance?
Right. What about the argument that some people make, and I wonder about this, because it's short-term, North Carolinians are paying taxes, right? They're paying for this federal expansion, and they're not getting an expansion themselves. So
that's what the op-ed says. You know, John Kasich from Ohio essentially said, you know, we're bringing the money back home, right? Because Ohioans are paying money paying federal taxes, and then that money is getting spent in other states on the Medicaid expansion. I mean, there's something to it. It kind of reminds me, I don't know how old you are, but when I was a kid, there were always these games on the game shows where you get into kind of like a snow globe that's filled with dollar bills flying around, and your job was to grab as many dollar bills as you could, you know, within 30 seconds.
Right.
You know, it kind of has that game show feel to it. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, all this money's flying around. We better grab it while it's still here. You know, and I think one of the worries that people have about the Medicaid expansion, you know, one is the tapering off when it goes down to 90%. And again, although it's a 90-to-1 match, you're still talking about a lot of money. You know, I was looking at, for the Kaiser Family Foundation, you are looking at the state spending roughly $280 million more per year. In other words, they have to find $280 million in either new money or cuts from existing programs.
But looking at some other studies there that are saying that this, you know, this would create all these jobs and healthier people that would be paying into the system. I mean,
you really think that's true?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of looking at the science, really.
I mean, health and education are, you know, have two things in common. They have a long and variable lag. Seeing the impacts of a healthier community is something that you will not see a noticeable effect for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you know, just because that's going to has to work its way through the system. And, you know, then you have this big question, is that system going to be maintained? You know, and you know, one of the problems you see with education is education seems to reform itself every 3 years. Any set of reforms are never in place long enough to see if they actually worked. And I'm always suspicious of the whole, you know, it's going to create jobs argument, because I don't see how taking money from one pocket, from the charity care, and putting it into the paid by insurance is somehow or another going to create jobs. What I've seen a lot of times is there's often just kind of they don't look at the net impact. When you see these studies, they often look at just the gross impact. In other words, only one side, only the benefits.
Right.
You know, so they might say, oh, okay, we're going to have more people on Medicaid, which means that we're going to have 50 more new Medicaid caseworkers, and those people are going to go spend money, but then they don't recognize that, okay, well, gee, then that means there's going to be somewhere else in the economy where that money is coming from that's going to reduce jobs, right? So the state spends $280 million more on Medicaid. Okay, that's going to help some people off. It may create some jobs. Where does that $280 million come from? That $280 million is going to come from taxes, fees, and charges, and that's going to reduce employment somewhere.
Right, right. But doesn't that sort of like bring us around full circle to that question of whether or not this money is coming in, you know, one again, I'm trying to figure this out because it seems to me like if, you know, you take a dollar from Washington, D.C. that comes to North Carolina and comes to, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then we then tax, say I'm the government. I then tax my citizens 82 cents, but I provide a dollar of something. I mean, isn't that still a win for the state? I mean, I don't really know. I'm trying to figure it out.
It's a bang for the buck.
Right.
Right.
But, and isn't the argument really, I mean, of the study that be careful with this look at this bang for the buck because it's not free. But it seems to me like you're getting the bang for the buck rather than, you know, it seems like, it looks like, you know, you can look at this thing and say, well, now, you know, the state is spending money, but the state's also getting money. So it looks like they're spending less than they're getting.
You know, the one I look at is, maybe a better analogy would be the streetcar. Let's say the feds are paying half of that.
Right.
Charlotte doesn't need a streetcar. You ask people, they don't want a streetcar. Someone wants a streetcar that's a politician, right? And he says, oh, look at this free money. You know, they're paying for half of it. We got to do it. Look at the bang for the buck. It's 50-50. You know, we're already making 50. I don't know how you think you're making money by spending money. Anyway, we're making all this money from the feds by building a streetcar. And you say, oh, wow, okay, that sounds great, even though we don't need the streetcar. But, hey, you know, it's free, right? It's like I go to a garage, and my wife gets mad at me because I go to a garage sale and I find something cheap that we don't need.
Right,
like,
right.
What does it do? Well, it goes in the cabinet.
Right. But just looking at Medicaid, I get your point on that. But just looking at Medicaid, I mean, we definitely want people healthy. We want people getting coverage. I think most people agree that, the emergency room is a bad deal for citizens and also for people who do have insurance that take on the cost of treating people in emergency rooms. And that, of course, gets us into that question of whether or not people are going to the emergency room less. But let's just assume that the law worked as intended.
Here's the quick hit. If you are just looking at it from a dollars and cents standpoint, I think it'd be hard to argue against. From a short-run standpoint, it'd be hard to argue against doing the Medicaid expansion, at least in the years where it's covered at 100%.
Right, okay.
That's a hard one to argue against. As we go forward to next year and working toward 2020 when it goes to 90-10 formula, I think that is where states need to do some soul-searching. So, you know, North Carolina says, do we actually have an extra $280 million to spend on this? Even though the feds are giving us nine times that amount, we still have to come up with $280 million. Where is that going to come from? And, you know, they may decide that from a spending standpoint, that's a good use of funds.
And it's interesting with a $21 billion budget.
I would have a hard time arguing against that one, too, for the most part. The bigger issue that you're going to have is, you know, what's going to happen in 2017 when the next Congress gets together? Because there has been a lot of hinting that the Medicaid expansion is very expensive and the feds can't pay for it. And then a big part of the Cadillac tax was supposed to pay for the Medicaid expansion. You know, Cadillac tax is on its way out. So where's the money going to come from for the Medicaid expansion? I would be very afraid that after 2020, that money's going to dry up, that match will not be 90. It might be 70. It might be 50. Then what do you do? You know, there's the old story of the king who was nice to his people and then got more strict, and they ended up killing him. But the guy, the king who was strict but got nicer, was the one who was lauded.
I mean, but doesn't it seem, though, that the people who are sort of arguing against Medicaid expansion are the ones who would be in favor of dropping that coverage down? I mean, it's almost like they're making the argument we shouldn't expand because look what we might do. When you're saying, like, the federal government doesn't have the money to do that, I mean, clearly they do, because they're doing it now, right? I mean, is that correct to say? I mean, obviously, we have this whole issue of spending in this country, and we're in debt, but the money gets spent. You know, I just don't know how it works. But it seems to be like that the argument of saying, well, we shouldn't expand Medicaid because what Congress might do, it seems to be that the people who are arguing against expanding Medicaid would be the ones that would want to lower the threshold of the amount of money that the federal government is paying because they're opposed to it in principle anyway.
I think I follow you, and that seems to make sense if you look at the states that have chosen not to expand Medicaid. It seems to fit in. You know, the Medicaid expansion is, you know, again, I think it's a tough issue, but I'm all, you know, from a, and I focus, my focus on this report was mostly at the state and local level from the state and local spending perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
States have a balanced budget. Most states have balanced budget requirements. I think every state does. You know, and
yeah,
so
North Carolina does,
at,
I believe. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, again, if you're looking at North Carolina based on the Kaiser Family Foundation's projections over the next 10 years, Kaiser says that North Carolina is going to have to come up with roughly, you know, $280 million a year to cover the Medicaid expansion, if they did the Medicaid expansion. And so then the question is, where does that 280 come from? And it has to come from somewhere. I mean, that's the state's part of what has to get paid. And so do you cut other state programs to fill that 280, or do you raise taxes to cover that? Do you have some sort of new fee or charge to get that $280 million?
And do you really think that, you know, when we were talking about whether or not people are healthier, I mean, do you really not think that people will generally be better off if they're not going to the emergency room and they have coverage? They can take care of long-term problems. They can get long-term problems like, you know, cancer, that kind of stuff, taken care of before they're ending up in the emergency room, and that will be more cost effective in general, and that's where that money comes from?
Well, that's a tougher call, simply because I don't know what the answer is to that. You know, based on what I've seen, or what I recall seeing, is that there hasn't been much of a change in emergency room usage, mainly because the coverage is so bad. And, you know, when you're talking about something with the long-term expensive problems, that's not the group that you tend to see. You know, that's a small portion of the population. It's an expensive portion of the population. Those people are better off, and they may benefit from having a cancer doctor. But when you see that most of the usage of, you know, most of the Medicaid usage is acute stuff. When my kids were on Medicaid, it was, you know, why did they go to the hospital? Why did they go? They went for strep. One of them had strep throat.
Right.
And that was it. You know, what did we do when we needed to get a checkup to play on a sports team? Well, we paid cash to a doctor to do that because it was impossible to find a doctor under the Medicaid program that would do the required physical to participate in school sports.
Oh, okay, I see.
How am I better off by having insurance that doesn't do anything?
Right. Right. I mean, wouldn't
and you're seeing this now too. I mean, this isn't just a Medicaid issue, right? You hear about, you know, the probably the number one complaint that people have. Well, probably the number two complaint that people have about health coverage today, even private health coverage through the exchanges, is A, it's expensive, and B, they can't use it because the deductibles are so high. So they're paying $1,000 a month for coverage, and they have a $5,000 deductible. So even though they're paying $1,000 a month, they're essentially paying full freight for their coverage up until they hit that deductible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what, you know, I'm paying $1,000 for what? And mm-hmm. It's the same sort of thing I think a lot of people see when they're on Medicaid is, yeah, great, I have this card that says I've got health insurance covered. That'll work when I go to the emergency room, but it doesn't work when I'm trying to find a trying to find a general practitioner or trying to find a dentist.
Okay.
But that's completely outside of the scope of what the report's about.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I know, and I'm speaking out of turn. So the problem was the data couldn't really cover Medicaid just because of the way it was.
Right.
It turns out that most of these people, once they thought about, oh, this could apply to Medicaid, they really picked it up and ran with it and tried to do something with it. And it is an issue. I mean, because there is the matching funds, but it's not, the scale's totally different. You know, you're not talking about the 82 cents on the dollar. You know, you're talking, 10 or 11 cents on the dollar.
Right.
Over 10 years, Kaiser says that if North Carolina expanded, the feds would spend $42 billion more in North Carolina. That's a lot of money.
Right.
$42 billion more in North Carolina over 10 years.
Yeah,
North Carolina would spend $2.8 billion more. So the left would focus on that 42 and say, look at that, all that money that's flowing into the state. Think of all the jobs that are going to be created. The right would say, look at that $2.8 billion. Where are we going to come up with that?
Right, yeah. And it's a totally philosophical thing, and it's interesting because we were talking about this when we go to a yearly spending, and I think, what was it, about 150 million that you were citing of where would that money come from? And our budget,
I think it's 280 is what I got.
280, oh, okay, yeah, 280. And our budget this year, I think, was something like 21 point something billion dollars. And interest, I mean, like when they announced a surplus in our state, so that's where they're talking about the money that they didn't know before they started budgeting of what was going to come in. And it was something like $400 million in surplus. That's money that they didn't know that they were going to have. And so making the argument of where is this money going to come from, it sounds like this amount of money isn't that big to cover then additional 500,000 people. It just seems hard. I'm trying not to take a position on it, but it seems hard to me for them to be making the case that these people shouldn't have coverage. And the problem is that I don't understand what their alternative solution is. And it's sort of just like, there isn't one. It's just sort of like, well, you keep more money in people's pockets, but these are people that aren't getting coverage right now that would get coverage immediately if they would expand Medicaid. And so it seems almost like they're looking at this sort of down the road benefit themselves of like, well, you keep money in their pockets and they get coverage, but they don't have coverage. Yeah, I just don't know.
And that's always the big, the big debate is, a lot of people use the term healthcare and health insurance synonymously. A lot of people get decent healthcare without health insurance. That was the case, before the Affordable Care Act. And by the same token, you can have a lot of people who have insurance who have health insurance that really don't get health care.
Oh, yeah, right.
Not just the Medicaid people. But for my own health insurance, there are times where I say, I don't want to go to the doctor. I don't want to spend, my $50 copayment to go visit a doctor.
Right.
Because I've got a sore throat. And my own doctor, he thought with the biggest problem with health insurance today was that the deductibles were so high that people don't go to the doctor when they should.
Right, and I know that was the case that President Obama was making when he was pushing the health care law, and he was giving the anecdotal stuff about his grandmother not being able to afford it, even though she had insurance and she just couldn't afford the cost. So it seems to be like on the left and the right, it seems that there's agreement on what the problem is with insurance and kind of reining in the cost of having health insurance.
Well, yeah, and that's because, and again, that's not an accident. That's all, it's by design. I mean, what's happening with insurance costs and coverage is exactly what people said would happen. When they went to, guaranteed coverage, community rating, where the rate for the riskiest person can't be more than three times higher than the rate for the least risky person. And when you have these, mandated conditions that have to be covered, that drives up the cost. And one way that there's there's a number of different levers that are pulled. You know, you can affect the actual premium, the co-payments, and the deductibles. You know, those are all three different ways that you can affect the, you know, essentially the pricing of insurance. And so, you know, you can have a really high premium but a low deductible, or you can have a low premium and a high deductible. And, you know, people tend to choose for the low premium because that's what they pay every month, and then they end up with a high deductible and they end up not using the insurance package.
Mm-hmm.
And I've plotted this out for Oregon's health insurance exchange plans. I mean, it's, you know, almost a perfect line that you could see. You know, higher deductible, lower price. I mean, to me, health coverage and health insurance, it's not really not. I mean, I've done a little bit on it, but it's not, you know, my thing. I wouldn't hold myself out there as one of the, you know, top experts in the field on that. I know enough to be dangerous. And, you know, to me, that's just fascinating. That seems to be one of the bigger issues right now. It should be a topic for one of the presidential debates more than what we had last night.
Well, let me ask you this about your study and how it was used by Civitas. And, I mean, are you comfortable with the way that they sort of portrayed your data as a, you know, sort of being a bad idea for expansion of Medicaid? I mean, do you think that they handled your data appropriately? And do you think that almost more bluntly, does your vision almost align with theirs as far as the conclusions that they draw from it?
I think I'm in probably 90% agreement with that. You know, I'm actually much more ambivalent about the Medicaid expansion. You know, if someone put a gun to my head and said, you know, what would you do? I would probably lean toward not expanding, doing the Medicaid expansion.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, to me, Medicaid expansion is not something worth getting out the pitchforks and torches for.
Right.
No, and, you know, they do, you know, I think they fairly characterized it. And, you know, the way I tend to work is, you know, I do my work, I write my report, I stand by that, and then, you know, people can do with it, you know, what they want. You know, I've learned a long time ago that I can't micromanage what other people do with my work, because I know someday someone's going to pick up this study who's going to, you know, be on the other side and say, see, look at that. You know,
right.
Look what Fruit says. And so, you know, I just, you know, whenever I do these things, I'll usually get an email from someone saying, oh, you know, there's comments on the website. You know, can you go post a response? No, I'm not going to do that.
Do you?
You know, A, I don't want to feed the trolls. B, you know, the work is done.
Do you think Medicaid itself is a good idea? Do you think it was a good thing that they passed that in, I think it was 65?
Yeah, I mean, I think Medicaid as a concept, I mean, you need some sort of health coverage for the poor. And, you know, I don't know, I think the way it's done may not have been the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But something, you know, should be there. You know, I'm not in a, you know, not a knuckle dragger.
Right. Do you think that?
Although it turns out the knuckle draggers engaged in healthcare. They found in Spain a cave of Neanderthal bones. It was some weird thing where there was like some sort of like sinkhole. So near a burial ground. So they found like 30 or 40 different, you know, Neanderthal bones in the bottom of this cave. Well, it turns out that one of them had a broken femur. You know, femur's your thigh bone.
Yeah.
Femurs take forever to heal when they're broken, especially when they're when you don't have modern medicine. You know, this guy, you know, the femur was healed when he died, and so he did not die of the break. And so what was pointed out was that here you are, you know, more than 30,000 years ago, these Neanderthals had an injured member of their own group, and they dragged him along with them. You know, they literally, you know, they had to drag him. There's no other way to bring this guy along. You know, the guy's eating food, consuming resources, not contributing in any way, but somehow or another, you know, they took care of him until he was healed. And so, you know, I kind of take that basic approach that, you know, we do need to take care of those who are less fortunate. And, you know, so some sort of system out there is, you know, it needs to be done for that. You know, as with all government policies, the devil's in the details.
Right, and with Medicaid, you're in favor of that as more as a concept, I guess. And
kind of what
you were talking about with privatization. Do you think, like, if you sort of had it your way, would you sort of move it more towards a privatized kind of system?
You know, one way of doing a Medicaid type system that would be something that I would like more would be, you know, give them a voucher. See, the way Medicaid works is they give you insurance and you have to find a doctor. Why don't you do it the other way? Why don't you give them something where they can go find the insurance, because the doctors will go with the insurance? You know, so why not give them an ability to, you know, buy Blue Cross or Anthem or I don't know who's in North Carolina. And then that way they're in that network instead of having to try to find someone who's in the Medicaid network. And plus, then if you do it that way, then you got the better reimbursements and so forth. You know, that would certainly be, I would think, a superior way of doing Medicaid coverage.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked an hour now, so we should probably wrap this up. But is there like any way that you would sort of summarize your study and what it says, and sort of the lessons to be drawn from it?
Well, my lesson would be just kind of the basic, you know, economics professor lesson is, you know, look at both sides of the equation. You know, look at both the benefits and the costs. When someone says, oh, look, we're getting all this free federal money for whatever program it is, you also have to ask, okay, well, how much do we have to bring to the table? And then whatever we're bringing to the table, where is that coming from? Because it has to come from somewhere. It has to come from either reduced spending on existing programs, or it has to come from increased taxes, fees, or charges somewhere to pay for that. You know, you could play a game where you hope that maybe your revenues next year come in higher than they did this year, but that doesn't happen every year. You know, we've seen that in the recession where, you know, state and local governments were bringing in a lot less money than they thought, and they had to make those tough decisions.